Playwright, screenwriter, novelist, and director Arthur Lorentz died yesterday at his home in Manhattan. He was 93. Lorentz wrote the books for the landmark musicals Gypsy and West Side Story, and he wrote the novel and screenplay for the Hollywood hit The Way We Were, starring Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford. Lorentz grew up in Brooklyn. He wrote plays and screenplays in the 40s, but his career was interrupted when he was blacklisted for several years because he'd worked for civil rights causes and joined a Marxist study group. Lorentz collaborated with Leonard Bernstein and a young Stephen Sondheim on West Side Story, which opened up on Broadway in 1957. Soon after, he worked with Sondheim and Julie Stein on Gypsy, which starred Ethel Merman as Rose. Here's one of the big numbers from the original cast recording.
Some people can get a thrill knitting sweaters and sitting still. That's okay for some people who don't know they're alive. Some people can thrive and bloom living life in a living room. That's perfect for some people of 105. But I at least gotta try. When I think of all the sights that I gotta see, yet all the places I gotta play, all the things that I gotta be, yet come on, Papa, what do you say? Some people can be content playing bingo and paying rent. That's peachy for some people, for some humdrum people to be. But some people ain't me.
Terry spoke to Arthur Lorentz in 1990 as he was directing a revival of Gypsy, starring Tyne Daly as Rose. Lorentz felt this new production could include elements from the book that were left out of the original production, as they were considered a little too dark for Broadway.
The production was really rather sweet. It laid off a lot of things that, it being 1989, I was able to do. It's very different from the other productions. It goes much more deeply into the relationships, into what I would call the dark side of it.
What's an example of something that was too unpleasant for the original production that you could go into now?
Well, it still is. I mean, Mother is still sacrosanct in America. And they don't like, a lot of people don't like seeing this woman who is not the most pleasant mother in the world. But also there is this relationship between Rose and Herbie the agent is extremely sexual now. It has elements of romance, but it's distinctly a man-woman relationship. That was never played before.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the original production, Ethel Merman starred as Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I've read about the original production, you weren't really satisfied with her performance.
You didn't read that anyplace.
Well, what I read was that you referred to her as an opening night performer, someone who gave her all on opening night.
Yes, she gave her all, but...
After that, it kind of diminished a little bit.
That's true. I'm very grateful to Merman because I don't think they would have done the show without her,
mm-hmm.
even though she was on the skids, as it were, at that time. She had had a flop or two, and as a matter of fact, the show opened with almost no advance. And if we hadn't gotten good reviews, David Merritt, the producer, told me we'd play 6 weeks and that was it. She did us a great service, and for that time, she was terrific. But it was never what I felt the performance should be.
Well, I read that one night you had a talk with her in front of the whole cast about her performance, about her not giving her all. What did you say to her?
I don't know where you read that.
I think it was in Sondheim and Company.
Well, it's only semi-true.
Mm-hmm.
What it was, I don't think she wasn't really an actress. She didn't know she had taken to walking through the show. But what I called her on was that she and Jack Klugman, who was played opposite her, the show had been running 6 months, and they were breaking up on stage, telling each other jokes, which I think is insulting to an audience. The audience comes, make them laugh, not each other. And I called her on that.
What was her reaction?
Oh, it was as though she were a naughty little child who'd been spanked. she took it.
Mm-hmm.
Went right on doing it again.
Now, you directed the 1973 London production
of
Gypsy with Angela Lansbury.
Right.
And I just know this production through the cast recording, which I think is wonderful. Tell me about casting Angela Lansbury in the part and directing her in the role of Rose.
That, again, was totally different. She's a very fine actress, and they wanted to do the show in London. It had never been played in London because when it originally opened, Merman was going to do it in London, and then some agent unwisely convinced her, and she unwisely said it, let herself be convinced, that she was so terrific that she should go on a concert tour of the United States. So she refused to do it in London. They would have no substitutes, and her concert tour did not do well, which is the understatement of this interview. So it had never been done in London, and they wanted to see it. And the producers wanted Angie. I knew her. I'd worked with her before. And we did it in London. And again, it was different from this production because the emphasis was more on the comedic quality. She's a really terrific comedian, Angela. And Rose was quite a reach for her. There's a kind of earthiness, if you will, trashiness about Rose that's very difficult for Angela to get. But in her own terms, she was terrific. There was no relationship between her, again, and the agent.
There are wonderful songs in Gypsy. Now, I've heard Stephen Sondheim, who wrote the lyrics for Gypsy, say that he sometimes likes to incorporate lines from the script right into a song. So that the lyric is really speaking the mind of the librettist, the person who wrote the book. Did that happen in Gypsy?
It happened a lot. Steve is wonderful to collaborate with, and he thinks I am, because I say, go ahead, raid the dialogue. For example, the first line of Mr. Goldstone, have a Negro Mr. Goldstone, was taken from the dialogue. But he means really more than that. He is one of the too few lyricists who knows that each character speaks differently and sings differently. They have a different diction. So he waited in the case of Gypsy, for example, till I would write the characters. He would see how they would speak. That affected what lyrics he wrote for them. Their language is different.
Do you ever feel that the librettist gets the least credit in a musical? You know, in a musical, you always hear so much more sometimes about the songwriters.
Every librettist feels that, and it's accurate. No musical is ever referred to as the work of the librettist. It is only referred to in the terms of the composer, and if the lyricist is as famous as Steve Sondheim, the lyricist. I think that goes back to opera, where you don't know who wrote the libretto for the operas. You
mm-hmm.
only know the composer. And I think one of the reasons we don't have more and better playwrights writing musicals is that everybody has a need for recognition, which is, by the way, what Gypsy is really about. And it is so frustrating not to get any recognition for what one has done in creating a musical, that a lot of playwrights simply won't try. And you get the people write letters to the Times and the critics say, oh, yes, and then for 2 minutes they recognize the librettist and then they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a given. The reason I do it is I just love musical theater and I love writing them. I'm stuck.
When you're writing the book for a musical, do you have a sense in your mind of where the songs belong and what the transition into the song is going to be like?
Total. That's the way I write. I plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
I do as much as possible to write into the music. Let the music take over. Lift the characters to the point where they can't do anything else but sing.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. At the end of the first act of Gypsy, there's a song called Everything's Coming Up Roses, which if you haven't seen the show, you think is a kind of happy, jazzy Broadway tune. What happens with that song is one of the reasons why I don't want it, and we all don't want it to be made into a movie again. What is done with that song you can only do on the stage. You can't do it in the movies because movies are too literal. What happens is a woman literally goes off her rocker and bursts into that song. This is a woman who suddenly has an enormous disappointment. She's furious. She's angry. She rages. And she rages until she can't anymore, and it comes out musically. It's against the emotion. It's all this ridiculous, insane optimism that this woman has. And it's done in music.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we listen to Everything's Coming Up Roses? Angela Lansbury singing. This is from the London production that you directed in 1973.
And just remember that listening to her are her daughter and her lover, and they are terrified and stunned by this woman's madness.
I had a dream about you, baby. It's gonna come true, baby. They think that we're through, but baby, you'll be swell, you'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate, starting here, starting now, honey, everything's coming up roses. Clear the decks, clear the tracks. You've got nothing to do but relax. Blow a kiss, take a bow. Honey, everything's coming up roses. Now's your inning. Stand the world on its ear. Set it spinning. That will be just the beginning. Cutting up like the lights.
Angela Lansbury from the London production of Gypsy. We'll hear more of Terry's 1990 interview with Arthur Lorentz after a break. Lorentz died yesterday at the age of 93. This is Fresh Air. We're listening to Terry's 1990 interview with playwright, screenwriter, and director Arthur Lorentz, who died yesterday at the age of 93. Before we get back to their conversation, let's hear the Jet Song from the original Broadway production of West Side Story.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, if the spit hits the fan, you got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're never disconnected. You're home with your own, when company's expected, you're well protected. Then you are set with a capital J, which you'll never forget till they cart you away. When you're a jet, you now I know Tony like I know me, and I guarantee you can count him in.
In, out. Let's get cracking.
Where you gonna find Bernardo?
At the dance tonight at the gym.
But the gym's neutral territory.
Ooh, I'm gonna make nice with him. I'm only gonna challenge him.
Great, Daddy-o.
So everybody dress up sweet and sharp. Meet Tony and me at 10. And walk tall.
We always walk tall.
We're jets.
The greatest.
When you're a jet, you're the top cat in town. You're the gold medal kid with the heavyweight crown. When you're a jet, you're the swinginest.
Let me ask you about the book that you wrote for West Side Story. Now, I believe the idea for a musical based on Romeo and Juliet was the choreographer Jerome Robbins.
That's right.
Well, how did he originally pitch it to you? What was the initial idea he proposed?
The initial idea was quite different from what it was. It was about a Jewish girl and a Catholic boy in New York over Easter and Passover. And I thought that was AB's Irish Rose, and I wanted no part of it. And then several years passed, and I happened to be in California, and Lenny Bernstein was in California. By that time, juvenile delinquent gangs had come into being. And on the coast, there was a great problem with Chicanos, which in New York was Puerto Ricans. That's where the idea came from, the front page. And that's what the... And then Lenny and I called Jerry and said, we're ready to go.
Did you have any reservations about singing and dancing gangs?
On the stage, no. In the movie, yes.
Mm-hmm.
On the stage, the stage is total illusion. You come into a box, and you see this proscenium, and then people hop on and hop off. There's an orchestra in the pit. But people have imagination, and the theater makes you use it. And you will accept almost anything. But movies, to me, are either... The nature of the medium is such that movies are either realistic, by that I mean naturalistic, or surrealistic. To me, in the movie A West Side Story, I know it was a great hit, but when those boys came tourgeteing down the street, I didn't believe it for a minute. I still don't.
Now, you didn't write the screenplay for either Gypsy or West Side Story. Did you want to?
I wasn't asked to write the screenplay for West Side Story, and I wanted to. I was asked to write the screenplay for Gypsy, and I was going to till they told me they cast Rosalind Russell, and the director was Mervyn LeRoy, and I bowed out. We had wanted Judy Garland. They didn't because they said she had a weight problem. But, of course, with the passage of time, Gypsy covers 15 years, even if she had a weight problem. If the white weight went up and down, it wouldn't have mattered.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the movie?
Of Gypsy?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's a candidate for one of the worst movies I ever saw.
So, you know,
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The only good thing in the movie was Natalie Wood.
Uh-huh.
R.I.P.
Well, just give me a sense of what you hate about the film.
Well, Rosalind Russell was very busy being Rosalind Russell. Again, she was wonderful in Wonderful Town. She's wonderful when she played this, what they used to call a dame. This hard-driving, executive, smart-cracking, certainly middle-class, if not upper-middle-class, woman. This is nothing from this blousy, vulgar, common, trashy Rose. I mean, she wore chic clothes. I remember her black and white high heels in the train station. It was just all off.
Mm-hmm.
A number of weeks to check up on them, and as in the immortal words of George Kaufman, remove the improvements.
You've written for movies and for the stage. Mm-hmm. What are some of the primary differences between writing for the two forms?
The other day, there was a movie I was considering writing. Oliver Stone was going to produce it, and he called me up and said, why don't you want to do it? I said, because the day I finish the script, I'm out on my ass. I wrote my first movie in, I think, 1948. This is now 1990. There's a lot of talk, but essentially, the attitude has not changed. The writer is low man on the totem pole. Would they woo you and they'll pursue you? He's the least paid comparatively of the actors and the directors. And the great God in Hollywood, as in this country, is money. That determines respect. And once they have the script, as it says in Gypsy, so long, Rose, don't slam the door as you leave. You're out. And they do. Not only do they cast and play it as they want, they rewrite it as they want.
Now, one of your screenplays, The Way We Were, which you also wrote a novel of the same name, there's blacklisting in that, in Hollywood. Were you ever blacklisted yourself?
Absolutely, in The Witch Hunt. Mm-hmm. And there's an example of what they do. The climactic scene in that story, in that movie, was shot and neatly cut out.
What was the scene?
The scene was where the Barbra Streisand character says to the Robert Redford character, he says to her, the studio says I have a subversive wife, and they will fire me unless you go and become an informer. And he wants her to inform, to save his butt. And she says, well, there's a very simple solution. Willy-nilly circumstances force you into this. I will get a divorce. You won't have a subversive wife. What they kept was willy-nilly circumstances force you into a solution. I will get a divorce. The whole business about informing and subversion, which was what the picture was basically about, they cut out. They said the public doesn't want it. They want a romance. How did they know? I don't know. Maybe they looked in a crystal ball. But it's so unsatisfying. The picture was a great success. But what I wanted to say in that picture, what the picture was about, gets thrown out with the garbage. So it's not very interesting, exciting, fulfilling. I could go on with the words, for me to work in movies. The theater, with all its handicaps, is exciting and a bigger challenge, and you can do more and you have more fun.
Thank you so much, Arthur Lawrence, for talking with us.
Thank you.
Arthur Lawrence speaking with Terry Gross in 1990. Lawrence died yesterday at the age of 93. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.